All right. Hello. Thank you. Thank you guys all for being here. I wanted to also thank Luca and Luca for helping me with some technical stuff this morning. That was very nice. And thanks for the introduction, Marjo, and to the conference organizers. This has been a real pleasure. It's kind of an unusually intimate and friendly and collegial sort of a conference that I've really enjoyed being here and participating. I feel like I've learned a lot. So thanks to you guys for putting this event together and for inviting me to be here. So in this presentation, I'll be looking at crossovers in early microscopy, botany, and anatomy, particularly of reproductive organs and the relationship to generation. Narrowing my focus for this presentation on only a couple of examples from a wider study of this exchange of ideas in the late 17th century, I'll be discussing some of the debates that were sparked regarding reproduction through the use of a microscope and then how they played out in images, particularly incorporating interactions between Italy and England, a little bit to the Netherlands in there also, and all of that kind of as it's being fed through the Royal Society. In particular, I'm going to highlight the ways in which the Italian anatomical studies influenced the visual production of the English microscopist Nehemiah Drew, who was deeply embedded in the Royal Society in the 1670s. Drew was an English physician commissioned by the Royal Society to act as their curator for the anatomy of plants, and he worked as a secretary alongside his more well-known peer, Robert Hooke, who we heard a bit about yesterday. Drew's also conducting his studies of plants contemporaneously with the Italian microscopist Marcello Malpighi, who's well known for his contributions to the study of plant anatomy and embryology. So here on the right, we see one of Drew's illustrations showing the gradual development of a seed in a series of dissected apricots. Table 81 shows 11 figures that have been prepared in such a way as to make the visible the inner workings of the fruit as it undergoes the process of generation. As viewers were taken through a variety of levels of zooming in and cutting away of exterior parts, temporally condensing the slow growth of the seed onto a single sheet, resulting in a sequence that combines a movement through both scales of size and also time. The final image in this series is found on the next page. It's an enlarged apricot, taking up the entirety of the page, with the pith now nestled within the larger pulp of the fruit and the fully developed seed still visible through a small cutaway in the glowing inner white membrane. Now, Piggy's image likewise shows the uncertain process of growth. Each figure from 32 to 38 depict a progressive set of moments in the maturation of a chestnut tree up to a period of 3 years of growth, as seen in the largest of the protuberant circular forms. Both of these images show the hand of the observer in the cutting and the preparation of the cross sections, and both show the compression of time into a series. Drew and Malpighi's visual production is born from many of the same circumstances. Both were practicing physicians, for instance. They're also using the same methods, and each is independently conducting a real anatomy of plants at the same moment. Breaking in significant ways from the tradition of the herbal, the importance of the preparation methods and frameworks of understanding that were incorporated by these men from the anatomical tradition are just as central to understanding the images they produced as are the lenses that they were using to magnify the specimens. In fact, when looking for parallels between the visual production of Drew and Malpighi, it's arguably more useful to turn to Malpighi's illustrations of dissected animals. So compare Drew's apricot figures to a series printed in a short treatise by Marcello Malpighi that discusses the development of the chick and the egg. These two sets of figures, one showing the growth of a seed and the other a chick embryo, share more compositional similarity than many of the overlapping plant studies and representations that Drew and Malpighi did. As before, time has been compressed with hours or days of growth shown taking place in a single glance, acting like a time lapse. language borrowed from Sirica Egmund. However, also in these, an even more sympathetic visual logic unfolds as we're presented with a succession of cleanly dissected holistic forms, the cuts allowing the viewer to peer beyond the surface of a specimen at a gradual development of new life. In Malpighi's chick illustrations, concentric membranes swell and multiply while nestled within a small tubular form grows and takes on distinguishing features. Gru's layered apricot pit responds to the complicated series of uterine membranes that are being shown in Malpighi's image by also showing the enlargement of an inner membrane, which expands around the bulbous seed, taking shape within the apricot pit. Gru's inseminated apricot illustrations are participating in a broader set of reproductive claims and debates that are taking place largely not in the herbal tradition, but in the anatomical tradition. Both of these sets of illustrations were themselves a part of a longer tradition of observing the development of animals in the womb via the relatively accessible and plentiful chicken's egg, with early illustrations resembling Malpighi's first appearing in Fabricius's Deformazione Ovi e Pulli in 1622. Using the exemplary chicken egg to study generation is a practice dating back to the work of Aristotle, and the egg is often used as a stand-in for the womb of all animals. Malpighi's illustrations from several decades after Fabricius's form his own response to this debate and incorporate his careful work with the microscope, which had already also been done by Highmore in England. So there's a lot of movement of this debate back and forth between the two countries. Reproductive debates were raging across Europe. The work we see being produced by Gru and Malpighi can't be understood as the product of their own isolated observations of plants and animals. They're rather engaging with a broad community of observers, and their images are designed as visual arguments to be placed alongside the images of their counterparts. The influence of Italian studies of reproduction in the English context can also be traced through their appearance in publications of the Royal Society. For instance, in an early issue of Philosophical Transactions published in 1668, in this volume, the editor reissues an essay on testicles that was originally published a decade earlier in Florence by Claude Aubrey Lotharingus under the pseudonym Fonglerus. Aubrey's essay from a decade prior is introduced by the editor of Philtrans as being extremely relevant for debates that are being had in England at that moment. He writes that Aubrey's essay is being republished because the subject therein considered is now under a severer examination than ever amongst the curiouser anatomists, both here in France and Holland. Aubrey's essay is the study of the anatomy of the testicle and is accompanied by two figures, an illustration of a wild boar testicle, which is the larger one there, next to a human testicle, which is the smaller. The two testicles are copied a bit roughly from the original Italian publication, Testis Examinatus, pointing to parallel developments in anatomical and microscopical techniques and technologies. The testicles in Philosophical Transactions are printed on the same plate as a series of instruments that are used for making the convex glasses found in spectacles and telescopes. These optical diagrams accompany a series of essays also being imported from Italian sources, translations of insights taken from the Italian Giornali di Letterati on the topics of lens grinding and other optical experiments. One of these short experiment descriptions are of an Italian microscope in 1668, a Divini microscope, which describes an atom of animals nearly a decade before von Leeuwenhoek christens his animalcules. There's an interesting juxtaposition here between these two technologies, one in anatomical methods and approaches and the other in magnifying lenses. The two are not quite overlapping in the study. Aubrey is employing lenses in pursuit of his discoveries, but he is considering scale and magnification in a different way. Aubrey's main insight in the short study is in discovering the inner structure of testicles as a series of long tubules or seminal ducts rather than as a homogeneous structure. Although he was not making use of the microscope, the illustrations that accompany his investigations have a careful relationship to scale in drawing attention to the very fine vessels and non-homogeneous structure of the interior of the testes. In order to magnify or see better the interior of the human testicle, Aubrey has included two species for comparisons, the human and the wild boar. Without a lens, Aubrey is bridging some of the limitations of scale and accessibility by using a comparative method to draw attention to similarities and shared structures. Aubrey assumes this universality of the quality of testicles that cross species. He thus uses the larger size of the boar testicle to make the principles he discovered in the human testicle more visible. Behold, he writes, I am bringing you twin figures, one of which is the male testes, the other the wild boar, so that in a more protracted mass, all things may be read even more clearly. This use of one species to illustrate the properties of others chosen due to size and visibility is methodologically consistent also with the approach that Gru took to plant illustrations. The apricot that we saw earlier was used as an example because of its availability and the visibility and universalizability of the structures that he found in those species. Yet Gru did often employ the microscope in his studies in addition to using larger species as a guide. But beyond only using larger botanical examples in his understanding of plants, Gru also used comparative analogies that crossed kingdoms. So compare Aubrey's testicles to a garden bean illustrated by Gru. It would be easy to dismiss the formal resemblance of these two images as a coincidence, which I did at first. But a close reading of Gru's text and observations indicate there is more to this similarity. Gru unquestionably read Aubrey's article and saw his illustrations because he references the essay in an earlier publication. The bean illustration we see here appears in the context of his discussion of the sexual reproduction of plants, where he's constantly comparing plant and animal structures. This illustration specifically is meant to draw attention to the bladders and threads of the spongy parenchyma. His observations mirroring those of Bonglerus and uncovering the non-homogeneous and differentiated threads. In describing this section of garden bean, Gru writes, the very threads whereof the bladders are woven are many of them so loose and ample as easily to be drawn out as in the unroving of knitwork. Aubrey's article, on the other hand, closes by a short note from the editor that recalls this quote by Gru. The structure of the testicles are congeries or heaps of very fine vessels that may be drawn out like thread. So Gru's engraving can be understood to form a rhetorical third comparative plate with Aubrey's testicles, as he implicitly is referencing this work and drawing out formal and structural analogies between the reproductive organs of animals, humans, beans, and by extension, all sorts of other plants. If we consider the apricot as a representation of reproduction, there's yet another suspiciously familiar visual form that appears across the series in the long channel, described with particular distinctness on that final plate that we saw. You can see it there too, on the top left of his plate. Running through the center of the apricot pit is a long, dark indentation, ovular at both ends, looking unmistakably sperm-like to a modern viewer. This resemblance raises questions about Gru's likelihood to have ever directly seen sperm, the small wriggling creatures having been only recently discovered by his Dutch contemporary van Leeuwenhoek using his relatively high magnification single lens microscope. Here we see the real fruition of the intersection of high powered lenses and anatomical investigation, and then its application to the area of plant anatomy. Leeuwenhoek sent his observations of sperm to the Royal Society in a letter on November 1677, and included some drawings of his observations. These eight figures outline a preliminary taxonomy of sperm types and provide a visual template for the spermatic creatures living inside a semen. Gru was acting as secretary to the Royal Society and responded to Leeuwenhoek's studies directly. His response is then referenced by Leeuwenhoek himself in a later letter in 1685. The impact of this debate on Gru is present in other places in the visual record. Compare Leeuwenhoek's sperm illustrations to the seed cases of coated Artsmart there on the bottom. This series of images, three variations of a sperm-like seed case, show the mechanism by which coated Artsmart disseminates its seeds. In the center of the case, Gru writes, is erected a pole or column upon which seeds do all hang very loosely. From this mechanism, the matter of that violent and surprising ejaculation of seeds is intelligible. The sperm-like appearance of these figures is surely no coincidence. And again, Brew's interest and engagement with the reproductive debates of his time can be found encoded in the visual form he evokes in his illustrations. These fruitful crossovers, via comparative anatomical strategies between microscopy, anatomy, and botanical study, led Brew to innovate in palynology by suggesting new mechanisms for the sexual reproduction of plants. And I'll end my presentation here because of time, but there remains much to say. I'm happy to discuss further examples in the question period. Brew, for example, also weighs in on early preformationist debates using a tulip bulb. But I won't go on for now. So thank you very much.